All righty, it's time once again for Truth About Markets with Max and Stacy, coming to you from Kilkenny, Ireland, where we are attending the Kilkenomics Comedy and Economics Festival, put on every year by David McWilliams. And this year we've got a stellar cast of economists and comedians. And before we get into the show, you know, I wanted to get some music on. You know, this is comes under the YouTube search for Negro Spiritual, which is a category of music in America that preceded spirituals and the blues, and then jazz, gospel, rock and roll. All comes from the Chain Gang down there in the Old South. The old Negro Spiritual. This one's called Lightning, Long John. Old song by Chain Gang.
Well, of course, you posted it to MaxKaiser.com as the Blockchain Gang. So that was the big news. Last night was the first night of this Kilkenomics Festival. Max was on a panel with Stephen Kinsella, who is an economist who and a professor at University of Limerick. And Deirdre, she's University of Chicago School. But the biggest applause and attention in the room came when the conversation turned to Bitcoin. There was a foot stomping. Everybody was all excited.
Oh, yeah. Well, the Bitcoin wave is now becoming a tsunami, and the price is zeroing in on 400. We told you on this show to get involved with Bitcoin at 3. And, of course, we've been talking about gold, silver, and Bitcoin. And Bitcoin is a hedge against gold and silver. And what do I mean by that? I call it the manipulation hedge, because gold and silver are being suppressed. They can't break out of their current price range because the cartel doesn't want it to break out of its current price range. But the cartel, the banking cartel, cannot stop Bitcoin. And I think the fact that Bitcoin is now closing in at 400 proves the fact that gold and silver are being suppressed, because the people buying Bitcoin are the normal buyers of gold and silver who have been buying gold and silver for years, and they're not getting the price action that they should be getting given the huge demand, the record demand for gold and silver, the historic record demand for gold and silver, and the relative dearth of supply. They're not getting the price move. So they're moving into Bitcoin, where there are no central bankers and commercial bankers suppressing the price, and they're seeing 1,000% gain this year. At some point, the cartel will lose control of gold and silver, and you'll see gold and silver gap open, and it'll be too late to buy gold and silver. But in the meantime, Bitcoin is making this historic run. It's got about a $4 billion market cap, to put that into context. Twitter just went public. It's got a market cap of $25 billion. So, that's 5-6 times the market cap of Bitcoin. Bitcoin is a global currency that could go after 1 or 10% of the global forex market, and Twitter is a $600 million per year in revenue company that could, I guess, at some point become $100 billion or $150 billion. But Bitcoin has the potential to become a multi-trillion-dollar piece of business. So that would imply a price of between 100,000 and a million from the current price of 400. And it's a much more interesting story. It's also about freedom, y'all. It's totally encrypted. It's a freedom from the bad guy, freedom from the man.
Well, yeah, I want to follow up on a few of those points there, because, of course, on Friday, the ECB surprised the markets with a surprise rate cut. So they went from 50 basis point interest rates in Europe to 0.25. They cut it by 25 basis points. So what happened in the markets was gold and silver fell sharply. Bitcoin rose sharply at the same time. So I think that the natural tendency in that situation would have been for gold and silver to rise exactly as Bitcoin had done. And you mentioned that Bitcoin is a $4 billion market cap. I haven't done the metrics lately with the latest price, but silver is a $13 billion market. So, however, silver is money. It's also a commodity that is used in industry. But Bitcoin is money and a payment system. So it's like PayPal and money in one.
That's right. It's got a dual purpose. It's both a, and to give you another very fascinating statistic from last week is that the volume in Bitcoin global transactions moving money around was about 50% that of Western Union. Now, Western Union's been in business for, I think, close to 100 years. Mm-hmm. It's the established leader in money wiring. It's where a lot of people wire money for their remittances. You know, they're working overseas. They send money home. They use Western Union and a few other competitors. Bitcoin has already captured 50% of that market. And at the current rate, it will blow Western Union out of the water. So there's an industry. So Western Union becomes like Blockbuster. Now, Blockbuster last week just closed down their last stores. You know, starting about 10 years ago, when Netflix and the threat of video on demand was first on the horizon, Blockbuster was where people went to get films. Now Blockbuster is gone. It's a brand that came and went. It's over. And they just shut down the last Blockbuster stores, video rental shops in the U.S. Western Union going the same way. Bitcoin will blow Western Union away. It's totally convenient. It costs nothing to send money. It's encrypted. It's outside of government reach. So, you know, this is a company that's about to go under now, Western Union.
Well, the other interesting thing is because Bitcoin is a payment system, you see it, the Bitcoin give the ability of certain developing nations to just leapfrog ahead because they don't have, for example, a functioning banking and payment system. So you see that in China, you see it in Kenya, you see it in Russia, where, you know, the transaction costs are very high and it's a very sticky financial system. Here you see, I saw somebody post, I think it was Russian Markets on Twitter. He posted a photo of a Subway sandwich shop in Moscow offering a 10% discount to anybody who uses Bitcoin rather than a credit card or debit card, because it's that much cheaper for them anyway to be transacting in that.
Yeah, that's right. It's an innovation in both payment systems and in the currency itself, in the concept of money itself. And last week, I think it was interesting because you had a big clash between the establishment financial press in America as personified, as exemplified, as established by Business Insider versus those in the Bitcoin community and the emerging cryptocurrency community. And of course, over there at Business Insider, which is a very popular business site, it's up there with, let's say, MarketWatch or CNBC. And it's headed up by a guy named Henry Blodgett. And Henry Blodgett, of course, was banned from Wall Street after, as they say in this country, telling porkies. He was caught, lying. So they banned him as an analyst at the time working for a big firm. They banned him from the securities industry. He went on to create Business Insider with his deputy editor, Joe Wiesenthal. So 2 years ago, Blodgett wrote a piece on Business Insider about Bitcoin saying a couple of things. First of all, he said he has no prediction on where the price is going. He has no idea. And number two, he said, well, it could go to zero or it could go to 400. And the 400 price was based, it was a reference to the scandal that got him barred from Wall Street because it involved a price target he made of Amazon at the time going to 400. So he has no opinion on Bitcoin, and he belittles Bitcoin. And Joe Wiesenthal went on CNBC to try to slam Bitcoin. Now, I made a few tweets saying basically that, look, Blodgett is a telling porkies, again, as he's known to do. Wiesenthal's been dead wrong. And these guys, like Western Union, they're the Western Union of financial news. They're going to be blown out of the water by Bitcoin. And sites like CoinDesk or Bitcoin Magazine, I see, are now in the top 20,000 most visited sites and moving up into the top 10,000 most visited sites. And I'm sure they'll be in the top 2,000 or 3,000 most visited sites. And Business Insider will start to lose ground, lose advertisers, go out of business because they didn't catch the wave. They don't understand Bitcoin. They don't understand the need for Bitcoin. They don't understand. Typically, they're the ones who would also look down their nose at Edward Snowden and people who have blown the whistle on all kinds of malfeasance and ledger and underhanded activities by the U.S. government, because there are establishment insiders who are protecting their small, very small turf, versus a guy we met last night who listens to our show. He put $500,000 into Bitcoin a couple of years ago.
$5. He bought 100,000.
Yeah. Now it's worth 30, close to $40 million. So here's
So
a guy.
he bought 100,000 bitcoins at $5.
Yeah, for $500,000, it's now worth $40 million, 38 million, closing in at $40 million. And so here's a guy. Does he read Business Insider? No, you know, unless he's trying to waste his time, he's going to read CoinDesk. He's looking to make investments in Bitcoin startups. He's looking to. This is the 21st century. You know, we are at that inflection point, Stacey. That year, usually the 13th or 14th year of a new century, is when something happens. This World War I was happening at the 1914. Going back to 1814 and 1714, I believe 1814 was Napoleon, the big Napoleonic surge. In 1714, there was another huge 100-year defining moment. Now we're at 2014, 2013. Bitcoin could be that global revolution. It could be the Napoleonic First World War type century-defining moment.
Yeah, the guy who bought the Bitcoin at $5, we're going to interview him on the Kaiser Report in the next week. So you'll see that. He's made a film, Life on Bitcoin, where you might have heard of this because it's been covered in the international media, where this couple has just traveled the world. They circumvented the earth only using Bitcoin, and they've just returned home back to Utah, so they managed the whole thing. He's now investing in Litecoin, so we'll talk about that as well. But yeah, so the Bitcoin's the big story. It hit all-time new highs. It's closing in on $400 because remember back in March and April, it hit 266 and then fell down to as low as $70. Now, it was that move, however, this was following Cyprus, the bail-in in Cyprus. It was following that move that you had an explosion of new companies coming on, better, stronger, more robust companies, people getting involved in Bitcoin, China developing systems. Kenya has M-Pesa now accepting Bitcoin. So you have a more robust framework now instead of just everything. Back in March, this is how fast it's all growing, is because back in March, basically Mt. Gox was the only interface with the media for Bitcoin. Now there's dozens and dozens and dozens of places to buy, to communicate about Bitcoin.
Yeah, the biggest market now in the Bitcoin exchange is in China. And you've got institutional players now using the Bitcoin Investment Trust out of New York from Barry Silbert's company, Second Market, which I think is a huge factor in the current rise, because the hedge fund community that controls $3.5 trillion, they look at this as an asset class. They want to be involved. And so when they put 2 or 3% of a $3 to $4 trillion market into a market cap of 3.5 to 4 billion, you quickly get to 5, 6, 7 billion. I mean, very soon, the market cap of Bitcoin will be $10, $20 billion. I mean, I think that is as we used to say in Wall Street, a 2-foot putt, given the market caps of other industries, given the $150 trillion around the world that's investing bull assets, sovereign wealth funds, and all these other funds that need investments. And so a $20, $30, $40 billion market cap of Bitcoin is completely in the bag. So you're talking $2, $3, $4,000 per Bitcoin, which, you know, when it gets there, people will slap their forehead and said, I see it now. It makes perfect sense. I get it. I'm going to buy some. But you could have bought some at $3 and $4 and $5. You didn't have to wait for it to get to $4,000.
Well, so here we have it. The ECB, sorry, by the way, I've got this sore throat, as you can probably tell by now. And so if I'm struggling to project my voice at the moment. But so the ECB slashed rates by 25 basis points to the lowest ever. Now, They also mentioned, by the way, for the first time coming from Draghi's lips, the words quantitative easing. So they've...
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes. And they're going to start it. They're going to start accumulating more of these assets. Now, we covered on the Kaiser Report today. Our guest is Zach Goldsmith. But in the first half, we talked about a Zero Hedge piece where they were talking about this collateral extraction, basically what quantitative easing is they're taking, you know, the Fed, the U.S. Federal Reserve has been buying up mortgage-backed securities, so therefore destroying the secondary market in that, and therefore destroying velocity. Because remember, everybody keeps on saying, well, the Fed is printing money, and there's going to be hyperinflation and lots of inflation. But this also requires velocity of money, and there's no velocity of money. There is a lot of printing. There's a lot of new supply. There just isn't velocity.
Yeah. You know, we hear this falsehood, and we heard it again last night on the panel, that, you know, the government owes money to itself, mm-hmm. and they can just cancel it. That's a falsehood, because when they cancel debt, they also cancel the balance sheets of the banks that are participating in owning those bonds, which is to say that the government couldn't cancel their deposits of $1 trillion, $2 trillion, $10 trillion worth of deposits without also canceling out the lenders, which would be the banks. And the banks, that would mean that the balance sheets of the banks go poof, and you have stock market would immediately trade down 60-70%. So that's the falsehood. But people in the academic world can state bald-faced lies. And unfortunately, the level of financial illiteracy is so high that they don't get questioned on it. So, of course, last night this came up, you know, I questioned it, and there's very little pushback from the other side once they've been exposed as charlatans.
Well, I think this story that we read on Boing Boing this morning is a perfect reason why academics can be dangerous, because they, you know, the thing is that they live on this ivory tower, right? And on paper, it all sounds good. On paper, fruit flies, for example, get eaten by, you know, a bird. And this is the cycle of life and evolution. But this freaking fruit fly called G. tridens has evolved to have images of detailed ant-like insects on each wing, complete with six legs, a thorax, antenna, and tapered abdomen. The fly uses the images defensively, waving them back and forth when threatened to create the illusion of massing ants. So what I'm saying is that economists look at it as a static system, and that people won't evolve or adapt to a system that becomes corrupt, or a defensive or offensive adaptations to whatever the perfect sort of academic theory is.
Yeah, it's an amazing story. I mean, the fly doesn't sit down with an easel and paints and decide to create an ant image on their wings as a way to ward off predators. If you look at this through the lens of evolution, the number of flies that survived going over a period of probably hundreds of thousands of years are the ones that have flecks of color on their wings that are mistaken by predators as ants. And this goes through millions and millions of cycles of birth and death until the blotches of color on the back of the wing is the exact facsimile of an ant. And those are the survivors. But they have no idea that the reason they're surviving is because of the natural selection occurring in the coloration of their wings. They themselves have no idea. And yet, this is exactly what's going on. And it also brought up a couple of things. For example, how copyright is so important to today's intellectual landscape, and that the copyright cartel wants to take copyright material off and out of the public domain. That means that there's no evolution of ideas, and there's no hope of survival if all of the ideas are owned by corporations. There's no intellectual evolution at that point. So this gives you an idea why it's so important to keep ideas in the public domain and why copyright should not be lifetime plus 70 years. It should be what it was originally, 28 years, giving a very limited time for monopoly protection to remixers of ideas. Remember, there are no original ideas. There are only ideas taken from the public domain, remixed, sold as art for a limited time, and then all those ideas have to go back into the public domain. Otherwise, you end up with intellectual stymification. You become lobotomized by a corporocracy. And it's just, anyway, it's so mind-blowing, this whole fly with the ants thing. It also kind of reminded me a little bit of 3D printing, where, 3D printing is now a huge story where people say, well, we can go out in outer space, and if we need to build a new rocket or booster or engine, we just, hit the print button, and they'll print a new rocket. These the whole idea of copying, et cetera, it's pretty remarkable. I don't know. Go check it out.
Well, I'm going to post this on maxkaiser.com under the Truth About Markets blog post entry. So because you really must see this photo. It's kind of mind-blowing to think. I mean, it leaves you a little bit feeling nauseous about how little we understand about the world around us.
It's like you're seeing something that only God should have seen.
Yeah.
Only God should have seen this. So either we're about to merge in some kind of spiritual harmony with the higher power, or we're about to become universally extinct because God doesn't want the competition.
Well, it makes you wonder if we're just little human-shaped flecks on the wing of some other bigger being.
True, true.
But so what else? Speaking of 3D printing, we will be interviewing Cody Wilson this week on the Kaiser Report. We will be talking to him, yes, on one of the days. I forget which days, but we're interviewing him this week, and you'll be excited by that. If you have any questions for him, do post them at maxkaiser.com. Now, he is the guy who started printing, 3D printing of a gun, and the feds, he posted the blueprint online. And the Fed asked him to take it down. The feds asked him to take it down, which he did, but it had already been copied over, like downloaded over 300,000 times, and now it's on a life of its own. It's like these ants on the wing of the fruit fly. And what do you think of Cody Wilson?
I think Cody Wilson is going to be remembered as. I'll contrast Cody Wilson with the guy who's now in jail for 6 years, who was an RT presenter for a while, who had his gun on the
Oh.
plaza and shot his gun, and now he's in jail.
Adam Kokesh, he's pled guilty to gun charges and drugs possession. He faces a maximum of 10 years. The sentencing, I think, is in January.
Okay, so let's Adam Kokesh versus Cody, and Cody is changed the way people think in a profound way by using a technology, 3D printing, to say a statement about gun control laws. That, okay, how do you handle this? Here's the new technology; people can just print guns. So, that is a very profound statement. It put him on the radar of authorities, and they are probably checking this guy out pretty closely. Versus Kokesh's protest, which was go into the Washington Mall in the middle of Washington, D.C., with the gun and start firing it off in a way that's very, very threatening, at calling for a revolution of people to come out with their guns. I think that was the original idea. Let's all come out with our guns and storm Washington. After all, it's supposedly that's our Second Amendment duty. Nobody else showed up. He was the only guy out there. He had his gun. He fired it off. Now he's facing sentencing and a potential term in jail versus Cody, who's out there with a technological idea, printing guns,
A revolutionary
a
idea.
revolutionary idea. And so I would say that's how I would contrast. I think they're both similar. They have similar politics. But, Cody took a different approach, and I think his approach is more in keeping with the times. And Adam Kokesh is I mean, he's somebody who is fearless and has and his protest where he was dancing in the to protest the anti-dancing laws got 1 million views, and it was hugely, resonated hugely. We wish him well, but I think that's who I would contrast it with what Cody's doing is like they're kind of similar in a lot of ways, and their politics are not necessarily my politics, but I would say that based on two guys who have seemed to have similar politics but two very different approaches to expressing those ideas, I think Cody's on our show and he's also involved with another guest on our show in the past, and they are coming up with something called Dark Wallet, which is going to be a Bitcoin wallet. And this is a technology that, again, is part of the revolution that is Bitcoin. I think what I'm saying is that Adam Kokesh should have jumped on the Bitcoin bandwagon sooner and seen the potential of it. I remember his show, when he was doing a show in RT, they wanted me to come on and talk about silver. But they had a very dismissive attitude towards silver because silver had made a run from 25 to 50, then it pulled back to 25, and these guys were mocking the whole buy silver crash JP Morgan campaign. So I didn't go on that show, and I didn't really feel they understood what I was saying or what the idea of crashing JP Morgan was all about. And so they certainly could never make the leap to Bitcoin. So Bitcoin is never on their radar. But that's where the revolution is. The revolution is in Bitcoin. It's not in waving around a musket, calling for millions of people to come out there and take the White House. So that's my thought.
Yeah, so we're talking to Cody Wilson about Dark Wallet, which is, from the images I've seen, they're actually crowdfunding it. It's a crowdfunding campaign on Kickstarter to get financing for Cody and Amir to develop this. It's going to be, this is one of the things that has been absent in the Bitcoin market. It's starting to emerge in the last few months, are more user-friendly sort of wallets and devices, and they're trying to make one of the most secure wallets. That is also very user friendly. Now, I wanted to look at this headline here from The Economist, which is very interesting. You were talking about revolutionary ideas, and I was saying how these developing nations are able to leapfrog us in many ideas because we have established older technological systems, and that our entire fabric of our economy is built around these. Whereas when it's new to a culture, they get to leapfrog us. And online video in China's online video market is the largest and most innovative in the world. It is also the most competitive. So last year, only 30% of the Chinese population watched television on a TV. That's down from 70% 3 years earlier. They've completely gone to online. The country has the largest number of online video viewers. That's around 450 million, or nearly 80% of the internet-connected population. Part of it is because of government restrictions on television. Online video sites in China owe much of their popularity to the government's tight regulation of the TV industry. All of the 3,000-plus stations are state-owned, and their programs are heavily censored. Rules about content range from the predictable, i.e., no shows inciting political unrest, to the puzzling, i.e., there are no depictions of time travel allowed on television. It takes months for programs to get official approval for broadcasting, and only an estimated 30% of shows that are made get aired on TV. Online video sites, in contrast, need a government license to operate but are left to police the content on their sites themselves. So, this is the early internet in America, by the way, when it was more libertarian, anarcho-capitalist, free market. People were able to do what they wanted until the government started cracking down on it. But what do you think of this?
Well, that the very few people in China watch TV on a TV.
And then they watch it online because they're able to be free online and make content that is more interesting and edgier and could talk about time travel, for example, where they can't on television.
Well, yeah, China is an incredibly and highly censored country, but so is America. We know from the NSA documents that Americans are being spied on in probably greater intensity than the Chinese spy on the Chinese people, because they have better technology to do so. Once again, you know, I think we're back to Bitcoin, because what is Bitcoin? It's a cryptocurrency. It's encrypted. What is the Snowden affair all about? Encrypted data, encryption. And so what will liberate China will be encrypted currencies. I don't think it's a coincidence that Bitcoin is now huge in China. China's their biggest market, because the Chinese people want to break free of government control. And Bitcoin gives them a way to do that. And now that encrypted video online and with sites like Kim.com in New Zealand with his mega, it's just out of beta. And they've come out of beta. They're bigger than Dropbox. They're bigger than the other leading online digital storage sites now. It's number one, I believe, in the world. And he's moving toward total encryption of everything, encryption of email. I'm sure as dollars, I'm sure as the day is long that Kim.com will announce very soon some kind of Bitcoin participation add-on or something like this. Bitcoin will be huge for Kim.com. Now you've got the biggest gaming company, one of the biggest gaming companies in China is Bitcoin. Kim.com will be Bitcoin. Price will go zoom past 1,000. You know, the Joe Wiesenthals of the world will have to be, carried out on a stretcher crying because they missed the biggest move of the biggest market in history. But encryption is the key. We are in the age of encryption.
So we'll put this into context back to this article here, because around 5 years ago, they say Chinese online video firms started competing directly with Chinese television. And this year, they'll spend $164 million making original programming that will never go on television. It's just online. And now they compare that to Netflix, Amazon, and Hulu are also starting to make content directly for online because of the cartels of copyright. And Hollywood, they're charging way too big of a toll for them to air those.
Well, it's slightly different because they're still copyright cartel players, but the Hollywood model, which is being blown out, is the window model. The window model is, let's spend a huge amount of money marketing a movie so that the opening weekend is huge, and then use that as leverage to do several windows of opening. It would go to foreign release, cable release, broadcast TV release, blockbuster release. So it's sold, the same movie's sold 5 or 6 times. But if you live in a foreign country and the hot movie comes out and America, you might, when I was living in Europe 15 years ago, you'd have to wait 6 months to a year before the movie showed up. So you'd see, oh, here's the latest, blockbuster in Paris. It got there a year after it opened in America. And this, of course, opened the way for the whole piracy, so-called market. People in Europe wanted to see movies right when they came out. Mm-hmm. And then Netflix said, why don't we just, bring the movie out. We'll do a big show with Kevin Spacey called House of Cards. We'll spend the same kind of money you would spend in Hollywood on a big budgeted TV series. We'll release it all at once, no windows, and we'll charge people a subscription rate. And that is now crushing the Hollywood model. It's the whole window model is being crushed, which is, since I was in Hollywood 15 years ago, this is the big argument I was making all the time, is that the window market is going to get crushed. And, of course, nobody wanted to hear that. So now they've got this all-you-can-eat buffet model. But they're still definitely fiercely protective of copyright. The MPAA is still huge, still influential. Chris Dodd is still, Chris Dodd. And the RIAA are still very powerful. But now, when I was reading that Pirate Bay is merging with Bitcoin applications, now you've got the piracy market that threatened to destroy digital copyright cartel meeting Bitcoin, and now they will do that because Bitcoin will, that combination is the 1-2 punch. The MPAA, they can arrest everybody. They can sue everybody. They will completely fail against the combination of Pirate Bay and Bitcoin.
Now, one more startling number to look at. So Bitcoin has arrived in China, okay? Well, these online videos are most popular with the 15 to 40-year-olds. And they talk about one of the most popular series is called Surprise, and it's a series that parodies such things as university entrance exams. Well, the pilot episode was viewed by 260 million people. So just the sheer quantity of human beings in China, when something like Bitcoin catches on there, it's a sudden, huge, deep, wide market that's why, if it's even going to capture a fraction of that market, the price has to rise in order to accommodate all of the volume of trade and commerce.
Yeah, well, you know, if you look at the documentaries about China, remember I saw a few referencing their one child per couple policy. So this goes back, 20 years or so. Couples could only have one child because they were having an explosion of the population and it was getting out of control. So how do they implement something like that? Well, it turns out that in every freaking village and hamlet and town in the entire country of over a billion people, there's a member of the Chinese Communist Party. So the Chinese Communist Party is freaking huge. And you've got, you know, 100 million people who work at the Chinese Communist Party who just babysit families all over the country to make sure they're not having, you know, more than one child.
Yeah. And now, they do that by asking the woman every month if she's had her period.
Yeah, they're in your face, you know, all those. So now you take, they have something like 40 or 50 million Chinese people do nothing but monitor the internet all day, you know, content. So there's, you know, you go into an internet cafe and there's five or six people. Chances are one of them is going to be a freaking, you know, Chinese Communist Party just sitting there, you know, hi, how you doing? Where are you surfing today? Are you enjoying your life? Do you like China? Is everything great? We love you. Yes, but you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't do this, you can't do that. So now imagine that reservoir of untapped humanity, biomass of humans ready to explode in a Cambrian-esque period of creativity all at once, thanks to the escape hatch of Bitcoin and encryption. And you see what's going to happen. You know, they're going to be releasing videos on their networks, encrypted, paying using Bitcoin, and it's going to be quite a remarkable thing. And that's where the Americans who say that, well, Bitcoin's great until the U.S. government decides to regulate it. As if the U.S. government, when compared with the biomass of billions of people trading online encrypted videos using Bitcoin, had any significance whatsoever. That's like saying, oh, you know, my basement's being flooded as part of the tsunami. And the answer being, oh, yeah, but you know, we've got this thimble. You know, we've got this thimble here, and this thimble is going to, you know, be a really major factor in stopping the flood. No.
Well, here's another interesting point about this article related to Bitcoin and what's happened this week at the Chicago Fed. So, getting slaughtered in the ratings by online video has prompted China's TV channels, state-owned ones, to try harder. So a wave of singing competitions and dating shows, some of them adaptations of successful Western ones, have come on air in recent years, particularly on provincial satellite channels. Meanwhile, CCTV, the central government's giant channel, continues to lose viewers. Last month, officials scolded other stations for their, quote, vulgar and excessive entertainment and push for more morality building and educational shows. So they're having to compete with these better online shows. Mm-hmm. It's forcing competition onto the state-owned ones.
Well, we just saw that with this show on CBS called The Good Wife, yeah. You know, which they suddenly looked at all these shows on cable like Breaking Bad and The Game of Thrones and Wired.
And
they came back and they said, you know what, we got to come and do a show that's better. And the show The Good Wife is a good show. It's got better writing, better plots, you know, it's a good show. It's not typical network garbage. So, which is what I, you know, gets back to what I've been saying all along, is that freedom means freedom to compete. There's your freedom. You have the freedom to compete. People think that somehow freedom is the freedom to get a state subsidized payment check every month. That's not freedom. That's enslavement.
So the I keep on saying University of Chicago because I'm thinking of that Deirdre woman last night. But the Chicago Fed came out with a paper about Bitcoin this week. And Liam Halligan in the Telegraph, who we took a taxi down to Kilkenny with him, he was talking about this paper. And in this paper, the Chicago Fed conceded that Bitcoin is genius, that it's actually extremely brilliant monetary device, and that suggested that the U.S. Federal Reserve copy it, make a copy of their own sort of Bitcoin.
Yeah, well, they're right. They finally figured out that what the Germans already figured out is that as a piece of engineering, it's ingenious. Mm. This is why Germans love Bitcoin. It's like they love the engineering. They're big engineering, and they recognize the stupendously exquisite piece of engineering when they see it. So now you've got bankers in America at the Federal Reserve level understanding that, wait a minute, this thing is actually engineered like nothing we've ever seen before. But then they come back and they prove how stupid they are by saying, well, we need to do one. Mm. Or, you know, we need to get involved. Or they don't understand that the cart, you know, the horse is bolted. Yeah. You know, it's out of the barn, long gone, miles and miles away. And you're sitting there with your buggy whip, you know, asking the question, where did everybody go? What happened? It's too late. They don't understand. By saying they can come up with their own is an admission of stupidity because they don't have the computational power to do it. If the entire computational experts in America got together to try to mimic the horsepower of the global parallel processing computational ability of the distributed network that is Bitcoin and the Bitcoin protocol, they would be about 50,000 computers short. You know, they're going into, you know, a gunfight with a toothpick. You know, they have no idea what they're getting into here. So they just don't have it. Maybe, you know, if the UN got together and they said, okay, the top 20 G20 countries are going to band together and create a parallel processing compendium that will compete with Bitcoin, maybe. But by the time that happens, the Bitcoin protocol will be already at a $20 to $30 billion cap. It'll be double or triple the size. The level of difficulty and the target number will have dropped down to another exponentially more difficult number. It's over, man. You guys had the gravy train for 30-year rallying bonds. Y'all took all the money out. You're all living fat. You're all basically retired. Just go home and shut up.
Well, the remarkable thing about this paper from the Chicago Fed is that it follows that classic saying about first they ridicule you. Because the early papers, remember the ECB published the paper over a year ago, essentially mocking Bitcoin. And the U.S. government officials and central bank officials also mocked Bitcoin at first. Now they want to join it.
Yeah, you know, that was obvious from the beginning. I guess what made me an early convert to Bitcoin when it was $3 was just listening to, you know what it was? We went to that conference in Prague, which is a Bitcoin conference. Rick Falkvigne was there. He's one of the top 100 intellectuals in the world, according to Time magazine. He wrote brilliantly about Bitcoin in the early days. And you walk into a room with 50 or 60 technically savvy young guys and women who are severely autistic, who are crippled with their autism and Asperger's disease, huddled together in a mass of brain power that could frickin' fry, you know, a maggot on Neptune if it was all concentrated correctly. And they're, like, pouring into something that is like a volcano of expression. And you're like, whoa, what did I just stumble into? So we immediately embraced it. Then we met Amir Taki, who, you know, he is a living space alien. I don't even think Amir Taki, I think he could be the first alien that I've ever met in my life. He is from a parallel universe. If you talk to this guy, first of all, he's never slept a day in his life. He's never slept. He said, oh, I started this experiment 10 years ago where I stopped sleeping. And it shows.
Well, it was at that event, that Bitcoin event, where I'll never forget witnessing his speech. Yeah. His talk, whatever you want to call it, where he talked about outer space. It's
his home. He talked about his home somewhere in outer space. And then, of course, Tony Gallippi was there with BitPay, which was just starting out. Now it's becoming a billion-dollar company. It'll probably be the first billion-dollar startup. It will be BitPay.
Well, so that's that. Remember where the truth about markets, we're on Resonance 104.4 FM. The guy you heard speaking there is called Max Kaiser. We often have new followers of Kaiser Report or MaxKaiser.com based on people driving around London and they happen upon Resonance 104.4 FM. They hear Max's voice. They hear his wisdom. They hear his rants. They hear all the stuff that he has to say about ants. And they say, wow, I've got to learn more about this guy. And sure enough, that might be you. You might be just tuning in right now and wondering who this crackly-voiced woman is with an American accent on your London radio channel. And it's us. That's us. And we're here in Kilkenny, though, actually, to add another layer of confusion. We're in Kilkenny, Ireland, and it's a lovely sunny day. You know, there does seem to be, compared to 3 years ago when we first came here, Max, 3 years ago, it was more of a panicked state that you witnessed and you saw around you. Now it's not so panicked, perhaps because such a large percentage of the population, of the young population, has actually emigrated. They've fled Ireland, as they often do during economic strife, and they're all gone. And now it's just the older people on government pensions.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the schedule, and I'm on three panels at this festival, and all three panels I'm on is with this Deirdre person.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Deirdre McCluskey.
Yeah.
Is her name, and she's an academic, University of Chicago. She's proud to be one of the Chicago school boys. Well, she used to be a man, to tell you the truth, and she's quite open about it on her bio for the on her bio page of the Kilkenomics Festival Guide. And now she's an ex-Marxist, she calls herself. You know, a lot of the Chicago boys, a lot of the neocons are former Marxist sorts, just like Christopher Hitchens. You know, he became radical. They were all Marxists first.
Because that's where they could get laid more easily. You know, the girls on that side were easier. Then they switched over. They switched back over when it was time they had to make some money.
Well, now she calls herself a Christian libertarian. She's a progressive Episcopalian.
Well, I'm an Episcopalian, and I can tell you there's no such thing.
What do you mean? Episcopalians are very progressive.
Well, all I can tell you is that I'm an Episcopalian, and I'm here back in Ireland trying to get a posse together to go back up to Scotland and take back our castle, and we're going to turn the Scottish economy into the first Bitcoin-based economy. Won't you join me? Please meet me and join my march up to Scotland and take over the country. Thank you.
So here's a few headlines from the Irish Independent today. Here's just one page. I'll read you the three headlines. Health spending needs further cuts after bailout, warns Troika. And the subheadline is, only time will tell whether our grin and bear it attitude pays off. Next headline, paid for water will still contain fluoride. The fluoridation of water to prevent tooth decay will continue when water charges are brought in next year. And then third headline, government encouraging emigration, say protesters. The group of young unemployed people stood in stoic defiance outside the Doyle with one simple message, don't sell us out by forcing us to work abroad. So what does that tell you on those three headlines there? Despite the front page headlines talking about how everything is recovering and we're exiting the bailout here in Ireland.
Well, I've been reading about it. It's just a shell game. They're moving the debts around. And the more important headline is that they've just changed the law here in Ireland to allow for the foreclosure on 46,000 more homes. These are people that were missold mortgages, people that have been victimized by the ruling kleptocracy, and now they're going to lose their homes. And I don't think that's a trivial thing. They've already had thousands of people lose their homes, and now they're getting for a 46,000 home. And it's like America, where they foreclosed on tens of thousands of people illegally, and then BlackRock, a private equity firm, came in, bought all those homes for pennies on the dollar, and now they're charging people rent who used to own their homes, and they're slumlords. They don't take care of the homes, they're not upgrading their homes. So they've turned those homes into, one step above prisons. And you're going to see in Ireland. So these people will be thrown out of their homes. Then a private equity group will come in. They'll buy all the homes for cash, for pennies on the dollar. Then all those people will move back into those homes. And now they'll be paying more for that home than ever before. And they've lost their sovereignty, their economic sovereignty, their home sovereignty, their personal sovereignty. It's a disgrace.
So what they're trying to do here, though, is just like with Latvia, okay? Remember, Latvia is also considered an IMF success story. And what happened there was actually that all the unemployed emigrated. So it looked like their employment numbers looked better. So here they're talking about Alan Douglas. He's one of the protesters here. And he was saying that young people collecting unemployment benefits here have been sent letters from the unemployment office informing them of work available overseas,
Right.
encouraging.
Like, get out, you Mick, you dirty Mick. Get out of Ireland. We want BlackRock hedge fund managers from Wall Street. We don't want the likes of you dirty pig.
Exactly. I mean, that's pretty shocking. A spokesman said the letters were purely for information purposes. For example, in relation to 464 construction jobs available in Canada, about 20.
Bunch of pigs. Where is this?
This is here.
Where? I gotta look at this.
This article. I always find the best stuff. Max
I am
whizzes
very
through
bad.
the newspaper in the morning, doesn't read
I'm gonna bring
anything, and
this
then.
down to the Kilkenny Festival and shove this up David McWilliams String String.
You're gonna what?
I'm gonna stuff this up David McWilliams String String. We'll see what happens.
Well,
It's a
so
disgrace.
this is what you don't see on the global news, like New York Times talking about Ireland. They don't talk about this stuff that is covered in the local news of
Jesus.
Yeah, I got
I've
it.
never seen such a disgraceful. Oh, we got five pairs of glasses on.
Well, imagine the equivalent. Imagine like people receiving their food stamps from the government in America saying, "You know, why don't you go down to Mexico, you know, to the
Right. I
not
hear the
not
tortilla plant in Tijuana is hiring. For a dollar a day, why don't you go down there, you worthless American scum? Well, that's awfully nice. Thank you, government. Thank you, Mr. Uncle Sam.
Yeah, well, this is just like, well, it's a lot of incompetence, I have to say, with this government, the Irish government. The headline, the front page of the Irish Independent is now revenue has to repay 3.6 million euros to 6,000 homeowners. So apparently there was a property tax shambles. So anybody who bought a home in 2013, apparently they accidentally put into this law because of the wording, three words in the legislation.
Yeah.
They accidentally gave exemption to property tax for 3 years to anybody who bought a home in 2013. Now
Yeah.
the Troika is not going to be happy with that though.
Yeah.
Apparently somebody had drunk too much Guinness during lunch.
They're going to reverse it now?
No, they can't. It's a law. So
They'll
they
reverse it.
so no
They'll
no no.
reverse it.
So several 6,000 homeowners paid 3.6 million euros in property tax that they now have to refund them because the legislation says
Okay.
they didn't
They
have
won't.
to.
They won't. They won't refund it. They won't. They'd rather stage a false flag attack somewhere than refund that money.
What, a false flag Guinness attack or like
Yeah,
something
they'd rather
happened?
have people like fall into a vat of Guinness and drown as part of a false flag attack that they'll have to call out the National Guard and bring in troops from Britain than pay this money. They're not going to pay this money.
Well, so we're in Ireland. And so this week, as I said, we're on the Kaiser Report. We'll be interviewing Peter Schiff. He is in London. He's going to be at our studios near the Tower of London. We're going to interview him. We're also going to interview Dominic Frisby, who's the resident gold bug at moneyweek.com. He's out with a new book, and that's called Life After the State. Then Cody Wilson, and we'll be talking to him about Dark Wallet. And we're also going to be doing a pre-record. We're interviewing this guy, Carl Gray, the one who bought 100,000 Bitcoins. And
when's your best friend?
Yeah, of course. Anybody who has 100,000 Bitcoin.
Yeah, I thought I was a Bitcoin, you know, player. This guy's a maca.
A maca. You know, when Max did have I Got News for You last week, we got a call from the producers before, you know, emergency call. Please return this call immediately. We need to know for something before this goes out on air. What does fakakta mean?
Yeah, they wouldn't air fakakta. I was supposed to be on BBC
Sunday Politics
today at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, but I'm
tomorrow.
But I'm in Kilkenny. I can't make it. Unfortunately, I would have liked to have done that. But you know, I tell you something. They always send out these emails that say, "We're thinking about maybe you having you on the show. Please get in touch." And then what they do is they insist on having a phone conversation or two phone conversations, or they want to express your opinion. In this case, it was interest rates and the ECB rate cut. And then after all that, they decide whether or not they want you on the show. So now this is unique amongst all broadcasters that I deal with around the world. Usually they just say, "We want to book you to come on. Here's the date. Here's the time. Here's when you need to be there." Okay, fine. But no, not with the BBC. Are we running out of time?
Yeah, we're running out of time. But they're very cautious because since the Russell Brand, Jonathan Ross episode, and they have to.
But here I would have, see, if I would have gone to do the show, I would have rearranged my flight. But if I knew that they booked me on the show and they could confirm the show on Friday and say, "We want you on the show," I would have said, "Okay, great. I'll change my flight. I'll be in the studio." But no, they're saying that we want to talk to you about the possibility of maybe you coming on at this time. Can you call us? I'm like, okay, who? I have a life. I can't babysit BBC commissioning editors and producers, with trying to convince them that, yes, it's important to cover financial terrorism. I can't help them if they don't want to cover it. Goodbye.
I'm leaving. I'm leaving this room. I've had it with this. Fuck God, I'm done. It's all over. Done.